is Investor IQ on News Radio 570 WWNC.
Thanks for tuning in this morning to News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains. My name is Glenn Wessel, and this is Investor IQ. Before the break, we were talking about closed-ended funds versus open-ended funds. Judy in Fletcher wanted to know basically what a closed-ended fund was. I would say that the major distinguishing characteristic between an open-ended and closed-ended fund is that open-ended funds are priced at what's called their net asset value once every day. That is, when the markets close and the fund closes, the fund tallies up all of its holdings, subtracts its liabilities and expenses, figures out a net amount of value that's in that fund, and it divides by however many shares that fund has issued, and that's the share price for the next day. With respect to a closed-ended fund, the closed-ended fund has the same type of portfolio, except that its shares trade on an exchange and are subject to the supply and demand tug of war that is the stock market. Excuse me. So therefore, the closed-ended fund shares can trade at prices that deviate significantly from what they're really worth on an intrinsic basis. That means that if a closed-ended fund were to liquidate, if it had, let's say, a net asset value of $10 per share, that's what it would realize per share. But those very shares could be trading on a stock exchange somewhere for $9 per share or $8.50 per share or $11 or $12 or $13 per share. So those shares could be trading at substantial discounts to what they're intrinsically worth, or they could be trading at substantial premiums. Typically, what happens in the closed-ended fund market is that shares will trade at discounts. Very often, those discounts will be in the double-digit range. So if a closed-ended fund had a net asset value or a liquidation or an intrinsic value of $10 per share, very oftentimes you'll be able to find those shares trading for discounts of anywhere between 7 and 15%. Sometimes the discounts go as high as 30%. So that is the major difference. There is a complete divorcing, or maybe not complete, but a strong divorcing between the share price and the underlying value of the fund. Okay. What else can I tell you about closed-ended funds? If you're not sure which kind of fund you have in your portfolio, you can look at the ticker symbol. A three-character ticker symbol would always specify a closed-ended fund or possibly an exchange-traded fund, whereas a five-character symbol that ended in X in all cases would specify an open-ended fund. So I hope that clears things up. We had another question that was related to that, Alice.
Roger, another listener, emailed us this question. He says his broker has suggested that they invest a substantial sum of money in a closed-end fund that will be launching soon. He expects this fund to yield around 7%, which is about 2.5% more than some of the T. Rowe Price and Fidelity bond funds that he and his wife were considering. Does this sound right, and how would this fund get that extra yield?
Okay, so that fund is yielding 7%, or is expected to yield 7%, whereas the other funds, which I think you said were T. Rowe Price and some other fund family,
Fidelity
would yield, 4.5%. So that is a considerable yield difference. First of all, investing in a new closed-end fund is certainly legal, but it's probably a mistake. I can't say that with certitude, but historically speaking, I can say that the great likelihood is that that is not going to be a good move. Why is that? Closed-ended funds, when they're brought public through an initial public offering, they have to be marketed through a syndicate or a syndication of selling investment banks or brokers. So, for instance, Merrill Lynch, Wachovia, UBS, they will all get together and underwrite these shares and tell the brokerage community to get on the horn and start calling people to sell these shares at the initial public offering at some price. The problem with buying the closed-ended fund at the inception of the fund or at the initial public offering is that that initial price is a stated price that includes all kinds of fee fat that is necessary to get the fund up and running. So, for instance, it's typical for maybe around 5% of the money that you used to purchase initial closed-ended fund shares, or I should say purchase the shares of the initial public offering, 5% of that money would completely evaporate in terms of wasted fees. So the problem is that brokers who sell these funds at the offering, they know very well that 2 to 3 months down the line that it is very probable, not just possible, but probable, that those fund shares will begin to trade at steep discounts to their net asset value. That means that if a fund shares were marketed at $10 per share, the likelihood is that if the market were just to stay where it was, over 2 to 3, 4 months time, those shares might be trading at $9 per share. Okay, so not only are you paying a premium to fees, you are paying way too much because if the fair value of that fund, or if the normal value of that fund, is to sell at a discount, why not buy it at a discount? I'll give you an analogy. If you were to buy a new car, you know that when you drive that car off the lot, the next moment or the next month, that car is probably worth 10 to 15% less on the market than what you bought it at. Functionally, however, you have a brand new car. So that's why you're not likely to find very many cars on the market that are 1 month old or 2 month old, because those deals just don't make sense from the seller's point of view. The problem is that there are many closed-ended fund shares on the market immediately after they come public, and very often that premium that they come public at, it just vanishes right at the gate, and there's no reason to pay that premium. As a matter of fact, the regulators were thinking of barring the closed-ended funds from the industry because they represented a poor value. But it was eventually overcome because the thought was, well, if you hang on to it long enough, it could work out, because that premium that you pay and those wasted fees will eventually be overcome if an investor holds long enough. But that doesn't mean that it's a wise move. It's very much like starting a football game, one touchdown in the hole. Why do that if you don't have to do that? So I think that pretty much takes us to the end of this segment. Once again, my name is Glenn Wessel. This is Investor IQ. You're listening to News Radio 570 WWNC. If you have a question, either contact me directly at 232-2000 or email me, gwessel@wesselinvestment.com, or visit wwnc.com's website and find us there. Thanks very much.